Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Later in the show, we're going to be talking about medical marijuana legislation and the recent lawsuit that was won by the ISU chapter of NORML, an organization for the legalization of marijuana. And we'll also be talking with Maria Alcivar, an immigrant activist and advocate. She'll be filling us in on what is happening in our own area in central Iowa with immigrant detentions and deportations. So stay with us for that later in the hour. The weather this week looks to be a little bit of everything. Today will be chilly, not breaking the freezing mark around Ames. But then Tuesday and Wednesday, it will go into the high 30s and 40s, although that will only be for 2 days. By Thursday, the highs will be below freezing again and will stay that way all through the weekend. Throughout the week, it looks like we will have quite a bit of sun, but also some windy days. It may feel more like March than February. As for precipitation, things will be dry in central Iowa until Saturday and Sunday, when we may get some snow flurries. I say that, but as I was driving in this morning, there were a few snow flurries. And remember that on the night of January 30th and 31st, we will have a blue moon, a supermoon, and a full lunar eclipse. It's the first time in 152 years that this has happened. We won't have much of a view of the eclipse here in Iowa, but you can still enjoy the second full moon in the month of January. That's what blue moon means. And it will appear very large because it's a little closer to the Earth this month. So it's called a supermoon. It's Monday, so we have our roundup of Iowa stories in state and national news from this past week. This is brought to you by the Iowa Informer. Last week, Iowa Senate Republicans proposed $52 million in additional budget cuts for this fiscal year. Cuts were proposed for public universities, community colleges, human services, and the state's justice system. The cuts, which would take away already appropriated money, would be nearly four times Governor Kim Reynolds' recommendation of $5.1 million. The Iowa Board of Regents criticized the $19.2 million in proposed cuts to higher education. In a statement, they said that it would, quote, cause disruptions on our campuses and undermine the state's goals for education and the economy. The Iowa Health Department recently released a set of rules for applicants interested in operating a cannabidiol dispensary under the state's new medical marijuana program passed last year. The 2017 Medical Cannabidiol Act allows people to possess the non-psychoactive part of the marijuana plant to treat a limited set of debilitating medical conditions, including cancer and multiple sclerosis. The law expanded on a more limited law passed in 2014 and authorizes the state's health department to approve up to five dispensaries. Des Moines Register reporter Tony Lays pointed out on Twitter that requirements to apply for a dispensary include having $5,000, no felonies, and completing the application using 12-point Times New Roman font. Lays tweeted, quote, I guess using Comic Sans would imply you're a stoner. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley, the Senate Judiciary Committee chairman, said that his committee will soon release the transcript of an interview it conducted with Donald Trump Jr. regarding a controversial meeting he held at his father's Trump Tower in Manhattan with a lawyer with ties to the Kremlin. Grassley made the announcement shortly after two Democrats on the committee publicly called for interview transcripts related to its investigation of Russia involvement in the 2016 presidential election, that they be released to special counsel Robert Mueller for his grand jury investigation. In his remarks, Grassley criticized Democrat and fellow committee member Dianne Feinstein for previously releasing an interview transcript of Glenn Simpson, the co-founder of Fusion GPS, whose firm is responsible for the intelligence dossier alleging that Russia has compromising information about the president. Grassley blamed Feinstein for ruining the Judiciary Committee's, quote, chances of getting a voluntary interview, unquote, with Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner when she released the transcript. Jared Kushner is also tied to the investigation. Las Vegas casino mogul Steve Wynn, who resigned as finance chairman of the Republican National Committee after the Wall Street Journal reported that he, quote, sexualized his workplace and pressured workers to perform sex acts, end quote, was a major donor to University of Iowa's Institute of Vision Research. In 2013, he pledged to give the University of Iowa $25 million and has already given the Institute $20 million of that pledge, in addition to $750,000 he donated earlier when it was named the Stephen A. Wynn Institute of Vision Research. At the time, Wynn said, quote, as a person who knows firsthand what it is like to lose vision from a rare inherited eye disease, I want to do everything I can to help others who are similarly affected. Wynn has denied allegations of sexual misconduct. The University of Iowa has yet to respond to the news of the allegations and his resignation from the Republican National Committee, according to the Iowa City Press Citizen, except for saying that it has never changed the name of a donor-named building in the past. And those were some of the ways in which Iowa made state and national news, as reported by the Iowa Informer. More news can be found on iowainformer.com. During the 2017 legislative session, we followed several bills related to marijuana, and we spoke with Jason Karimi at that time about drug legislation. So KHOI reporter Greta Anderson checked back with Jason for some updates.
I'm here with Jason Karimi. He is the director of Iowa Patients for Medical Marijuana. He's also communications director for NORMAL ISU. That's National Organization for the
Reform of Marijuana Laws.
There you go. And we've had him on a couple of times, especially last year. The Iowa legislature passed a law regarding medical marijuana in Iowa. We have other news today to explore, but just to catch us up on that law passed last year, when will medical cannabis oil be available in Iowa?
Sure. Iowans are going to be able to purchase medical cannabis starting December 1st of this year. That's when the deadline the state set for product to be available to sick patients will begin.
That's the deadline. Is there can companies provide it in advance of that deadline?
I don't think so. I don't think that's even come up. I think they're rushing to even make that deadline. It's kind of a strict timetable for them.
This is not a kind of oil that's produced in other states. It's such a small amount of THC.
They specified they will only allow the product you possess to be legal if it was produced in the state of Iowa. So if you have a medical card and you get the same product from a Colorado dispensary, that product is not going to be legal in Iowa. We're only going to allow Iowa-grown cannabis for patients in Iowa.
Okay. So that is down the road. But I guess your organization, NORMAL ISU, made national news last week. Tell us about that.
Yeah. This lawsuit that's been going on and has been kind of a lot of hard work for the entire chapter. We, as a group, just got a payout of $343,000. The damages to our freedom to discuss important intellectual issues as a student organization at one of the largest universities in Iowa, the damages done to society that the court said was around $343,000. We got that finalized on Tuesday. So we're very excited about it. It's good news. It kind of seems like there's a potential light at the tunnel, and now maybe we can resume getting back to the topic at hand of bringing academics to the table concerning reforming drug policy.
And that was all surrounding this controversy of a T-shirt that shows Psy holding the NORMAL banner. That's on the front. On the back, there's a marijuana leaf that's no more than 2 inches in diameter. And this T-shirt was banned.
Yeah, we were trying to get a message out. So this is an issue people normally shy away from. So our reasoning was, let's put something out there that might cause a little bit of heads to turn, and then maybe we can get people more interested in talking about this. The reaction we got was way more than we expected. It was people who were in political positions at the legislative state house. They called President Lathe at Iowa State University. And they said, hey, are you guys supporting marijuana? Are you pro-drug all of a sudden? And they decided to take a negative standpoint on this. They've never done that to any other student organization ever. So they started harassing the student organization back in 2012 and 13 about the T-shirts. They ex post facto changed the trademark licensing laws to specifically target NORMAL Iowa State. And since the First Amendment is still important in this country, the court ended up deciding against Iowa State's actions in that case as being discriminatory and stifling free speech on campus for students. So the court ruling ended up affecting much more than just the important issue of drug policy, which I think is the most important issue of my generation. But it actually went on to expand and allow more free exchange of ideas on campuses around the country. And that's important.
The logic just kind of blows my mind because, you know, we have, say, the ISU Republicans and we have the ISU Democrats, for instance. These are organizations or clubs that kids with like-minded political attitudes get together and support each other and promote their agenda. That's not the same thing as ISU supporting the Democratic Party or ISU supporting the Republican Party. Yeah. So why would an organization promoting marijuana legal reform, why would that be equivalent to the university promoting?
Well, it's very simple. Someone who spends full time for the past 8 years working on this issue, it's fear. There's no love when people come to the table with this. It's simply a decision between fear and love. These people are scared of discussing this issue out of ignorance. They need more education. They need it from a love-based perspective. And they need to open up and not be so scared.
Well, $343,000, that's quite a lot of money, Jason Karimi. What is your organization going to do with all that?
Well, the taxpayer money that we're receiving, $75,000 are going to each of the students that were listed on the lawsuits. That's $150,000 to student members directly. What they do with that money is being discussed right now. We're not wanting to really talk about that because we haven't decided yet what's going to happen. Otherwise, the rest of the money from that $343,000 is going to pay the lawyers. But so our initial final tally that's official as of Tuesday is the $343,000, of which $150,000 is going back to students in the organization.
Okay. Well, very interesting news and interesting development. So now we come to another issue that's arisen very recently, I understand, in Muscatine County with some oil that is not produced, you say, from marijuana, but is produced from hemp.
Yes.
And police have been seizing this oil. Explain.
We're trying to find out what the law actually means right now. The police, who are not legal experts, looked at this new law for cannabidiol oil, which has THC in it, and they went to these stores following complaints from people in the town. They have gone to the stores and claimed that these products, which were legal and on the store shelves prior to this medical program, are now illegal because of the medical program being passed through 2017. The medical program, according to the Iowa Department of Public Health, didn't affect these products. And so we think the police, they are not able to cite to us what law is being broken, and these products are remaining on the shelves around Iowa. It's been seven counties wide now that it's spread to, and the backlash from store owners in the media is they're going to fight it because the cops have exceeded their legal jurisdiction and are actually violating the law. After the Muscatine incident in Carroll, Iowa, the town of Carroll, they did a warrantless search. They said it looks like marijuana, so we're going to take it. There was actually a 9-year-old purchasing these non-marijuana products with no THC in it, only CBD, for a family member. And the officer who ended up confiscating these products without a warrant had actually expressed her dissatisfaction with her confusion about the law because she'd herself purchased these products 2 days prior to taking them all. So basically, no one knows what the law is in law enforcement, and our Iowa Department of Public Health seems to get it, that this is not marijuana products. The public release from the county attorney in Muscatine claims otherwise.
Okay, so just to back up, you know, hemp products are available practically everywhere. I own a pair of hemp tennis shoes because it's made out of the hemp fiber, and that was certainly not illegal. This oil you're talking about is made from hemp, and you say it contains no
THC whatsoever. And the company that was taken from it was Green Roads. They test all their substances and put on the package no THC. So it was very clearly marked and even gave the store owners paperwork in case there was confusion over the law.
And THC is the element that is being very finely regulated by the Iowa legislature in terms of how much is allowed in the medical oil.
Yes. Yep, that's correct.
But cannabidiol, an alcohol, I can tell because it ends in IOL. It actually has two OH groups based on my organic chemistry knowledge. That must also have some benefits. Otherwise, people wouldn't be buying it.
Yeah. See, first, there's kind of a question as to what law are the cops using to confiscate these products, because it may very well be illegal under federal law. So unless they're being directed by a federal agency to confiscate these products, they may have violated state law. So it's unregulated under Iowa law. Now, what it's for medically is anxiety, pain relief, there's an 86-year-old man with Parkinson's that tried to walk into one of the stores in Carroll the day after the CBD products were taken. It took him 20 minutes to get in the door. He's shaking so bad, yet when he takes these CBD products, he no longer shakes. So people are using it to specifically treat some of the illnesses that the THC program is supposed to treat later when that stuff becomes available. This non-THC hemp product is finding success with a lot of people, and that's why they're so angry.
This is so interesting. Now, I have to ask, did these actions by law enforcement come after Attorney General Sessions made his statement about the his attitude toward marijuana?
They did. And for one thing, Jeff Sessions helped the marijuana movement. He just gave Congress motivation to fix this issue, which they haven't had any motivation. So thank you to Jeff Sessions, truly. He's doing a good job. His legal analysis is correct, and I've been very public about that. But then this Muscatine attorney, it very well may be that it's because of Jeff Sessions, because this county attorney that initiated all these, what we seem to think is illegal raids, has ambitions to become U.S. attorney and get promoted. So we are looking into whether or not this is politically motivated or if this is in the interest of safety for Iowans, because they're not acting like it's a safety issue. If it was, these products are dangerous and should be pulled off the shelves immediately. And they're still all throughout Iowa. Whole Foods in Des Moines, Campbell's Nutrition, and Shag here in Ames.
They're available right here in Ames.
Yeah, right. I can go buy it right down the store and bring you the receipt right now. It's available on the shelf. Same products that they said were illegal. It might help your listeners know, I reached out to the Ames Police Department. One of their sergeants called me back. They had Drug Task Force go look at the products here in Ames. They said it's legal. So that's not a lawyer's opinion. That's just the Drug Task Force and the local police. But we have differing opinions amongst law enforcement agencies as to the status of the law. It's important we figure this out.
Yeah. It's kind of an interesting side note to understand the motivations of that Muscatine county attorney. But certainly it is important to figure this out.
Right. And I've talked with law enforcement in Carroll and in Muscatine. I talked with Lieutenant Tony Keyes. He said, just go read the CSA. I'll make it really easy on you. I was told the Controlled Substances Act makes it illegal. I said, dude, I've read the entire thing and spent 10 years studying it. I don't understand what you're pointing to. If you could help me, I can help you. And they didn't want to do that. They want to be pushing this away and put it as a notch on their career belt. They told the owners of the stores in Carroll that if they fought back, they would run them out of town. That's small town intimidation bully tactics that large town respectable police organizations don't engage in. So we're not trying to challenge them. We're trying to simply clarify what the legality of this is. If it's not illegal, we have the right to the products back. If it is illegal, we have a right to know why. And they won't even release the drug test results of the products to prove they have THC in them.
Okay, well, I imagine there might be a run on Shag down in the mall, you say, and Whole Foods Des Moines.
Yeah. And Campbell's Nutrition. Also, Natural Canopeutics LLC, I think, is the company that was distributing these products to these stores. They've now decided to make hemp T-shirts and go lobby the legislature just to bring this issue out into the open.
So, okay. T-shirts again.
Yeah, I guess. It seems to be popular. There's all the groups seem to have them because we're getting messages out. Huh?
Yeah. And your T-shirt, the size of the marijuana leaf has
expanded.
It
has definitely grown. It went from about 2 inches to about maybe 12. So, yeah, and we're going to try and raise the integrity and the level of intellectual input on this discussion. And to do that, you have to say hard truths.
Okay. Jason Karimi, he's the communications director of Normal ISU, also director of Iowa Patients for Medical Marijuana, talking about some seizures of cannabidiol, a substance that comes from hemp as well as marijuana, and in the cases of the product on the shelves, was manufactured from hemp. Interesting times. And thank you very much, Jason.
Thank you, Greta.
That was KHOI reporter Greta Anderson speaking with Jason Karimi. Thanks to Greta for that interview. If you've been paying attention at all to the news lately, you've been hearing a great deal about immigrant detentions and deportations, as well as DACA and the DREAM Act. We wanted to understand what is happening around those issues right here in Iowa and to understand the status of immigrants here in our community. Hearing their stories makes them real, and the absence of their stories allows people to cling to the idea that immigrants, especially black and brown ones, don't belong. So I sat down with Maria Alcivar, an immigrant activist who lives in Ames and works with immigrants and refugees, particularly those who are Latino, throughout central Iowa. The Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, also known as ICE, is the agency involved in the detention and deportation of immigrants who are here without documentation. And the word is that there's been an increase in ICE activity over the past year. We hear that a lot in the news. Is that happening here in Iowa? Are there more immigrants being detained and potentially deported here as well?
Yes, actually, since January of 2017, there has been an increase in activity, which includes surveillance, harassment, detention and deportation of immigrant families across the state of Iowa. So I'll just give you a background on how I know this information. So basically, I have worked with immigrant rights advocacy in the state of Iowa since I got to the state. In the last year, I was able to collaborate with a few Latina women in the Des Moines area to create a tool to basically provide some sort of resources and aid to the families that will be potentially impacted by Immigration Customs Enforcement activities. And so this tool is a hotline. And so this hotline is used by folks that are reporting, you know, surveillance, like I said, harassment, detention, and deportation of their loved ones, of something they saw, an activity they saw. We've been able to filter out in the last year a report of things that were activity that people just saw outside in the street and actual detentions and deportation of family members. So we are able to connect with the family members of those that have been taken away. And most of the folks that have been taken away happen to be fathers. They are all males. They are all fathers of actually U.S. citizen kids. The fact that that is going on in Iowa and nobody's talking about it, you know, that's why I'm really thankful for you to actually open up this discussion, because it is happening right next door of us and Iowans don't know about it. And it's important to talk about it. So, yes, we created this tool, this hotline. And so that's the way we're able to track these activities from ICE.
So what's changed in the policy that has caused this increase?
Yes. So previously with the Obama administration, these things were still happening. Okay. So what changed was Trump took away the exceptions. You know, there was a list of exceptions within the Obama administration. So he took that away and he was just like, everyone is game, basically. We can go catch anyone we want.
And what were some of those exceptions?
So some of those exceptions had to do with minor misdemeanors, right? So folks that had, you know, misdemeanors like, you know, public intox, or they, you know, were driving without a license,
yeah.
Know, things like that was not counted into, it wasn't a priority. That's what I meant when I said exceptions. The priorities changed. Obama had a list of folks that he was specifically targeting, but at the same time, families were still being torn apart in the Obama administration. Mm-hmm. Now, since 2017, when the Trump administration took office, ever since January, we started seeing a different pattern. And so the pattern changed in ways that were just basically racially profiling folks outside of Quick Trip when they were 5-4 in the morning, where they were trying to get gas to go to the construction site, pulling groups of men out aside, of brown men aside, and basically asking for papers. Their message was sort of like, well, we're looking for this one guy, so we got to see everybody's papers. It changed as well with the legal sort of processes. So, for example, asylum seekers. There's a lot of asylum seekers in the state of Iowa and refugees. They have constantly have to check in with the ICE agency. So they always have to go to the Department of Homeland Security's office in downtown Des Moines or in Cedar Rapids. I believe there's another one. And they have to constantly check in like every 3 months or so, every 6 months or
right.
so.
Right. I've heard of that in the news. And
yes.
then they go in for their routine check-in and things have changed.
Yeah. So they go in to the routine check-in, like you said, with their families, you know, thinking everything's going to be all right. But since January, we started seeing that folks were not coming out of that office. Folks were being detained.
And these are people that they lack legal documentation, but they've been living here sometimes for 15, 20 years. They have families here. They have homes here, jobs here,
right,
et cetera.
Right. So with asylum seekers, it could range. A lot of folks have already established their own, you know, families and communities here, and now they're coming back in to check in, just like a regular check-in, but they are being detained and taken to detention and then even transferred to other prisons out of state. So keep them away from their networks and the attorneys that they work with here, you know, because they're pulling people out of the state of Iowa. And so if they had any attorneys, which most likely they did as asylum seekers, those attorneys like now lack the contact. They lack that connections and access to their clients. And so that's what we've been seeing happening lately.
So they're rounding people up on the basis of their skin color or appearance. They think they might be here without documentation, and people are at risk when they go in for their regular check-ins.
Yes.
And are they also targeting people in other ways?
So what we heard from, like I said, from this tool, from this hotline, is folks were calling us with, you know, certain cases in the summer. We at least heard a couple of cases that when there was ICE agents around, and clearly you could see because they had their vans, and they usually are wearing some sort of bulletproof vest that says the ICE logo mm-hmm. in it. And so, and folks were speaking Spanish. They automatically were like, oh, so are you undocumented? Well, they use the word illegal. So
yeah.
They asked, like, are you illegal? Do you have any papers? Were you born here? A lot of folks don't know their rights. And so that's another sort of way that we've been trying to educate the community, is with know your rights. The fact that you can always remain silent, it is your right. Mm-hmm. You don't have to answer any questions unless they have a warrant for your arrest. You don't have to open the door of your house. And unless they have a warrant to go into your private property, ICE agents cannot go into any businesses. As a manager or as a business owner, you can also say, let me see the warrant, and you can mm-hmm. check that the warrant is actually signed by a judge, because that's what's been happening too, is that ICE comes in with this paperwork that hasn't been signed by a judge, basically coming into people's properties unannounced and without a judicial warrant, and picking up people that way, because people don't understand what that process is like and what their rights are. So we've been doing a lot of Know Your Rights across the state as well.
And so when people are detained in this area in Iowa, where are they usually taken?
So it depends. I'll tell you that Polk County has a contract with ICE. They have a contract where basically they have some sort of space rented out to them. And basically it's beds, right? So that they can hold folks in there. So Polk County has one.
Polk County Sheriff?
Yes. Yeah. And then there's one in Cedar Rapids as well.
So they're held there. And then what happens? What's the process?
Yeah, so it all depends. Folks that have had some sort of, let's say, DUI or some sort of misdemeanor in some sort of way, they are supposed to basically do time in jail. And folks that have had a previous deportation order, they still have to wait some time in jail, so that I guess the logistics of ICE is, as long as we get enough people to move them out of that jail, they'll remain there. So people have, you know, people that were arrested in March are still there waiting to go back to their home country. And they're in like general population. These are folks that have never been involved with any violent crimes or anything like that. And they are put in place in general population. So that's...
So they will be deported, presumably, but it's just taking it a long time to happen?
Yes, it basically takes longer here in Iowa because we're furthest apart from the border, right? So states like Texas, they take a bus drive back down to Mexico, and they are detained, for those that are from Mexico, right? And then they're detained there and processed there and then let go uh-huh. in their home country. But the process here is basically they have to wait some time. If they're not transferred to other out-of-state prisons, they'll have to wait some time here until they actually can be taken into an airplane and taken back to wherever country they're.
And so they may be transferred to other detention
yes.
centers. And we hear in the news about some of the really terrible conditions in many of those detention centers. And in some of them, there are actually families being housed
yes.
there. Is that correct?
That is correct. There's families. Honestly, we need to stop calling them detention facilities. These are prisons. What we know is that folks from Polk County are being transferred to Louisiana, to a detention facility in Louisiana. And then from there, they wait for more people to get transferred there so that they can take a plane and go wherever it is that they got to go.
I imagine that having the presence of ICE agents in the community creates a great deal of fear and mistrust.
Yes, it definitely does. From February to March, there was a lot of activity. There was a Midwest operation from ICE. And so we saw a lot of activity. We were getting calls every day. At least 7 people were calling us every day from February to March. It was a lot of activity. So this caused tremendous chaos in the immigrant communities around the state. I'll give you an example. There's this little hub of immigrants in Polk County. The place is called La Placita. That's how we acknowledge it. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's colorful. It's on Grand, and it's on the east side. And so there's a lot of Latino businesses there. And when these raids were taking place in between February and March, the business owners shut down. The business owners were asking us to, like, not talk about this because they were losing business. And so it affects in all sorts of ways.
Because people wouldn't want to go there.
And we heard from the school board members that families weren't sending their children to school during this month because they were afraid that they were going to be taken away from them. Mm-hmm. So children were not even going to school. They were not letting their kids go to school because they were so afraid. So it's a trickle-down effect when these things happen. Once someone knows about a detention in the community, it spreads like fire. It spreads automatically, and people just go into panic mode. And, I mean, we understood that this was going to be the lives of immigrants once the Trump administration took office. And so we tried to prepare, but seriously, Iowa does not have the resources to help the Latino community, or just the Latino community. But if we think about the entire immigrant community, it's just more than Latinos. In Iowa, we have a lot of folks that are seeking asylum and have refugee status. And they're all worried about what's going to happen next. What would the administration do next? And so this last year has been really tough on the immigrant community in general. So we know, for example, that at least from our phone calls, 64 families reported surveillance, persecution, detention, and deportation. Out of those, we have at least 67 U.S. citizen children who have been separated from their fathers.
And that's in the past year?
And this is last year. This is only the folks that call us. But the other things that we know is that ICE is conducting all their activity and all of the detentions in the morning. And usually what we saw from the pattern last year is that they're able to track folks. They have a car registration under their name, and they're able to track them through that. And so they're being pulled over in the highway. So we have, 36% of all the arrests took place on the road, on the highway. And this is also a strategy that we saw, you know, previous times that ICE has been active, is they try to do these detentions outside of public view. And they do it at really early mornings before people get to work. And then the other thing we saw is what I told you about racial profiling, is that this year we saw an increase in what we call collateral arrests. If you are with a group of, you know, brown men and they're looking for this one person, they're asking everybody else. I'll give you 2 examples. There was 2 restaurants in Des Moines in the summer. ICE went in there to the kitchen looking for someone. They knew he worked there, and he was not in for work that day. He was not scheduled, but they took everybody else. That happened in a Chinese restaurant in the summer in Des Moines. And then another Mexican restaurant. This was one of the biggest, I guess, the most impactful story that I saw in the summer, was a family of, like, couple cousins and sisters, right? It was 5 women. So I went to see them at their home. It was 5 women that were staying there with all their kids. And during the period of a week, ICE took all of their husbands in a week. And they went to their work area in the restaurants to take them. And all of their kids were there. They had their blinds down. Basically, we organized for people to come and give them food because they didn't even want to step outside. They didn't even want to step outside to buy food. And they needed food, and they needed formula for a kid who was 4 months old, a baby who was 4 months old, who not only his dad had been taking the week before, but now his mom was taking, and the mother was still breastfeeding.
Does ICE even ask when they take someone from work? Do they even ask, do you have children?
That's a really good question. Before the Trump administration took office, this was a regular procedure, especially with women. They would ask, do you have children? Are you the only one that could take care of children? Are you a single mom? Do you have, you know, family? That was a process before. They don't care anymore.
They don't ask that anymore.
No, they don't. Everybody's game, like I said. Have the range of folks that the children that were separated, it ranges from 4 months to 17 years old. This is what's happening. It's unfortunate what happened, but that kid was lucky that he had family that went to pick him up in daycare. Because in 2011, there was 5,100 kids who were taken into child welfare system because of immigration policy that was taking the parents of U.S. citizen children away.
And you mentioned that you feel that Iowa is not well prepared to handle or to support and assist the immigrants that live here.
No.
Even less so than other states.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Other states have a lot more. The thing is that our advocacy efforts are not well funded. There's a lot of folks that want to do really good work, but we are limited in our funding. In the terms of supporting immigrants that have been living here and that have homes here, that have settled here, that have children here, Iowa is very limited. I mean, we're slowly trying to build more coalitions with other resources like the food bank and folks that do like clothing drives and things like that, because those things are needed for families that end up in this situation. You know, their economics takes a big disruption. Usually is the main breadwinner of the home that is taken away. Sometimes the mothers have not even been in the workforce ever, and now they're having to live off charity and then figure out how they're going to make money. And so we're trying to provide support in that area. We're trying to have, you know, at least for them to keep the housing. We're trying to keep support for that in the best way we can, which is fundraising through churches, fundraising at any time, any point, anywhere that we can. We also provide some education to the mothers in ways that they can advocate for themselves, because there's so many people we can't reach all, right? We've been seeing a lot of support from the community and a lot of support as well from churches. That has really helped us out.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us. Above us, only sky.
We're listening to a conversation with Maria Alcivar, an immigrant rights activist in Ames. She works with several organizations in the area and is also a doctoral student in the College of Human Sciences at ISU. One thing that I did not get to talk with Maria about was temporary protective status, or TPS, which has allowed people from countries considered at war or in turmoil to remain in the U.S. An example of the local impact of this is a family in Perry who came from El Salvador and has been living in the U.S. since 2001 on temporary protected status. They own a popular Salvadoran restaurant in Perry and are a vital part of the community, but they may be forced to leave the country because protected status for people from El Salvador and several other countries has been ended by the Trump administration. The song we heard just a minute ago was Imagine by John Lennon. In our next segment of this interview with Maria, we will be talking about Dreamers and about DACA. The Dream Act was last voted on in the U.S. Senate in 2010 when it fell 5 votes short of passage. And I want to ask you a bit about DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. That's for people who were brought into the country without documentation when they were very young and grew up in the U.S. And I think everyone has heard in the news that Trump stopped that. But then there was a district court ruling that put a hold on Trump's order.
Yes.
They stated that people could reapply. So what's happening with that? Give us an update on DACA.
First of all, this is not by no means any solution, right? And DACA was never a solution either. And so we, as advocates, we understand that. And obviously, folks that are documented, they also understand that. What I've seen is actually folks not willing to reapply, not mm-hmm. willing to submit their applications because they're like, well, if I submit my application, that means they're going to continue to have my address. They're going to continue to know where I am. They're going, and I don't know what's going to happen with DACA because look what Trump did. He just took it away from me. So folks are not willing to risk it anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunate because DACA created a lot of economic, I guess, boost all over the country, you know, and even more so in the state of Iowa. You know, there's folks that are buying homes. There's folks that are creating their own businesses. And obviously, people that are engaging in state schools. By no means what happened with, I believe it was a California judge, is that a solution. And I think that the important thing is that we continue to push for a clean Dream Act because that conversation needs to happen in order for us to raise awareness about the real issues, you know. DACA actually, there's an age cap in DACA, and I don't know if people know this, but you have to have been in the country before you were 16, and then you had to have been at least 31 by 2012, which was when it was implemented. 31 years old. And so DACA actually didn't apply to all Dreamers.
Right.
It was actually about 2 million kids who were capped out of DACA. And so if we're talking about real impact on real change, at least some sort of immigration relief for folks, then that's not by any means a relief. Actually, the Dream Act will be more comprehensive because the Dream Act also will provide some sort of pathway to permanent legalization, you know, be it permanent residency or citizenship.
Can you explain what you mean when you say a clean Dream Act?
What happened with the shutdown, I believe, I think people are trying to understand that a little bit more because of the shutdown. But what happened is that Trump started his campaign with the border wall. He promoted, you know, the end of what they call chain migration, which is also known as family migration, which has happened since forever in the United States. But he also proposed to add additional agents that could be like Border Patrol agents or ICE agents so that they could be more interior enforcement. So he wants to add that into the Dream Act, you know, add amendments into the already existing Dream Act, which does not encompass any of those things. And so when we say clean Dream Act, we're talking about none of those things. We're talking about providing a pathway to citizenship to folks that have been here for a long time, that were brought here when they were younger, and that have been contributing to this country. DACA, you have to reapply every 2 years. Yeah. It's not, you're still in a limbo. You don't have any sort of relief. It's not a relief at all.
And clean means it wouldn't be tied to funding for the wall.
Right.
Or
to more enforcement.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's what clean means. Yes.
Last Thursday was Immigrant Legislative Day of Action down in Des Moines.
Yes.
Were there particular items that you were lobbying either for or against?
Yes. Actually, there is one that would affect the communities here in Iowa. It's the Senate File 481. And that's basically the most anti-immigrant bill that Iowa has ever seen, to put it simply. This bill will basically make police officers work in partnership with ICE, asking people for papers. We are begging the Public Safety Committee, which is meeting on Tuesday, to consider what that would mean for the communities across Iowa. It's been so hard for police stations, police offices, to have a productive relationship with communities of color and specifically immigrant communities. I'll give you an example, like places like Marshalltown. You know, they finally have a good relationship, the immigrant community, with the police department there. And now you're going to come and tell them that they have to basically ask people for papers? What do you think those relationships, what do you think that's going to cost? And so the Sheriff's Coalition actually is against this. They're against the SF-41. And I think that we need to listen to the folks that are on the ground and are telling you that these things will actually be more detrimental to the community than fix things. On Thursday, I actually went to the Capitol and I talked to the chair of the Public Safety Committee. And actually, it was a really good conversation because I'm at this point, you know, I'm a Latina woman, immigrant myself. I was undocumented for 14 years myself. I know the struggle. My family is in a mixed status family right now. My brother has DACA. So to me, it was good to hear why he supported that. I knew I wasn't going to change his mind by talking to him or lobbying him. I just wanted to listen to what he had to say. And what he told me is that he would do anything in his power to end the drug influx in Iowa because he connects undocumented immigration with the drug. But it had nothing else to do with immigration. He actually said himself, and his name is Cleo Boulder. This gentleman was very courteous to me and very respectful, and we came to understanding each other. He actually said to me, I know that 98% of immigrants, well, he actually said you people, but he meant Latino immigrants. He said, I know that 98% of immigrants are hardworking people, but there's always that 2%. And that 2% is bringing in drugs, it's bringing in crime. And so we need to do something to protect our community. And I told him, okay, I respect that, but that bill will have such a negative impact on people like me, on people like Kenya Calderon, who was right there with me, who is a DACA recipient. And comes November, Kenya told him, comes November when her DACA expires, that bill will put her at so much more risk of deportation than ever before in the state of Iowa. And he swore that that would not happen, that Trump was gonna is going to take care of DACA, that he will take care of the Dreamers, and that she shouldn't worry about it. And you know, I have another actual fact here: two DACA recipients in Iowa in the last year, with no criminal record, were detained by ICE. So you cannot tell us that this is not going to happen, that detentions and deportations are not going to happen with this type of bills to people like us that have no criminal record, right? Because it's already happening. At the end of the day, we had a really good understanding. And if I would have never actually took my time to talk to him and to understand him, I would have still been here thinking, all these people are just racist. They just don't like immigrants, you know? And that's the problem, that we don't sit and talk to each other and we just have assumptions. Just like people assume things about my community or myself, I also have assumptions towards other people. Those biases are always there. So I think what's important is to come to an understanding. Now, that bill is still wrong. I still don't think that bill will actually create or stop his intentions of what that bill is, you know?
So if people are listening and they're concerned about some of the stories you're telling and the status and conditions that immigrants are facing right now, what can they do? What can people do?
Well, the first thing is that I would say locally, I would start emailing your representative in the Capitol here in Iowa. And I would say clearly that you are not in support of SF-481. I know that this bill will pass the committee on Tuesday. I know that for a fact. He told me to my face. And he said, I wasn't going to lie to you. So I respect that, too, because a lot of politicians will lie to you. So that bill will pass a committee. But that doesn't mean that it's already a law. So we need to pressure our representatives across the state and talk to your local law enforcement and ask them what they think about this. And they will tell you that they will put the community at more risk. People won't come forward about crimes because they will be afraid that they will ask for statuses. And so I will say to people that are listening is talk to your representative about voting no for SF 481. Federally, I will also say you need to contact your senators, congresspeople, and talk about the DREAM Act. Talk about how you support the DREAM Act. And even after the shutdown, that the support for the DREAM Act for DREAMers was still there. And this comes from both Republicans and Democrats. So I don't know what we're waiting for, you know? Like, we need to come together and push and pressure folks to really put themselves out there for the immigrant community. Mm-hmm. I think it's been an issue that has been long coming. It's been many years since the United States reformed in any way their immigration policy. And this is the time to do it, to put pressure on folks. That's something that I would say. And the other thing is, if you're interested in supporting the families who have been impacted by ICE persecution, detention, and deportation, you can always donate to your local churches. And there's a church that collects money online. It's Walnut Hill Church from Urbandale. And they have a section where it says ICE enforcement related. You can click on that and you can donate as much as you want. Or you can create your own donations, you know.
Well, they can always get in touch with AFSC,
yes.
American Friends Service Committee.
Yes,
and
yes,
and what
yes.
was the other organization you mentioned?
Justice for Our Neighbors.
Justice for Our Neighbors.
Because, like, that tool that I told you, this hotline that I helped create, it's now housed by AFSC. AFSC actually has been really supportive in housing this hotline and being able to collaborate with local community members to provide more of a structured support for people. So, yeah, definitely contact American Friends Service Committee. They're one of our biggest allies.
Thank you very much, Maria, for giving us all this information and sharing with us the needs that are out there.
Thank you for having this conversation with me.
We've been listening to an interview done last week with Maria Alcivar, an immigrant rights advocate in Iowa. We'll have links for the organizations that she mentioned up on our website when this show is posted. The legislation that Ms. Alcivar referred to is Senate File 481, which will be taken up in the House Public Safety Committee on Tuesday. The chair of that committee, whom Ms. Alcivar spoke with on Thursday while lobbying at the Capitol, is Clay Baudler, a Republican. Another member of that committee is Democrat Beth Wessel Crochelle, who is our representative here in Ames. This same bill was passed by the Iowa Senate in 2017, but did not pass the House at that time. If passed in this current session, it would require Iowa law enforcement agencies to carry out enforcement of immigration laws, or municipalities will be in danger of losing state funding. The exact wording in SF 481 is, quote, a local entity shall not adopt or enforce a policy or take any other action under which the local entity prohibits or discourages the enforcement of immigration laws. There was a community panel about the current situation in Ames a few weeks ago with Sheriff Fitzgerald, the Story County Sheriff, the Ames Police Chief, and the ISU Police Chief. They all explained that they are not supported by the taxpayers of Iowa to enforce immigration law, so they do not currently do so. SF 481, currently being considered in the state legislature, would change this. Sheriff Fitzgerald also explained that the county jail does hold deportees who have already been sentenced elsewhere prior to deportation.
Imagine no possessions. Imagine all the people.
We also wanted to let people know about a talk that will be happening tonight at ISU called Race and Justice in America. The speaker is Brian Stevenson. It will be tonight at 8 o'clock in the Great Hall in the Memorial Union. Brian Stevenson is the author of a book called Just Mercy, and he is also the founder and executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative. He's won national acclaim for his work challenging bias against the poor and people of color in the criminal justice system. This talk tonight is the 2018 Martin Luther King Legacy Series keynote talk. This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to our interviewees, Jason Karimi, as well as Maria Alcivar. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Cynthia McClure. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Imagine by John Lennon. It's 2018, and as you can see, KHOI will be following what is going on in the state legislature and how it will impact our community. If you value that kind of legislative coverage, then it is a good time to become a member of KHOI. You can go to our website, khoifm.org, and look for the donate button. Or you can call 515-292-2878 or come by the station to join or make a donation. Or if you're interested in volunteering at KHOI, Local Talk is a radio production training workshop, which means you can be part of our team of volunteer producers, reporters, and engineers. If you would like to join the team, contact us at 515-292-2878 or through our website, khoifm.org. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Support for KHOI comes from Stevens Auditorium, presenting the Estonian National Symphony Orchestra on Thursday, February 1st at 7:30 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu.